VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 546, recorded on September 4th, 2019.
Welcome to the 546th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 379th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So yeah, I haven't posted last week's episode yet. So if you're listening to that previous episode a week late, that's why. Just a lot of things going on. And then we have to record this podcast on a Wednesday, thanks to Dorian. Who's going to be making a stop? Who's going to be making a call on us up here on the Friday? Although usually when hurricanes end their lives up here, it's usually just a very heavy shower.
Yeah,
it's not even a storm. It's a shower.
Yeah.
So, anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing the classic WoW, World of Warcraft, with some friends.
How crowded is it?
Not that crowded, actually, or at least I started off as a Night Elf in Darnassus, just like a few days ago.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't really that crowded. I don't know. I haven't gotten time.
Maybe Classic WoW is just for us nerds.
I guess. I know, supposedly the population of it has gone up to 8 million or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So this helped. Definitely a boost.
I haven't started yet. I will. I'll probably do a human priest.
I'm doing a night elf priest, but I miss my paladin. I had fun being a paladin.
Fuck paladins. I don't like paladins. No, seriously, they do everything the priest does, so why bother taking a priest?
Because they have attack spells. Yeah, they have res. And I think they're more focused on their healings and also attack magic. They have the shadow tree if you want to do that.
Yeah, I know. The shadow, I usually go with the heal tree. I only take a few things from the shadow thing and a few from the, what is it called again?
Discipline.
Discipline. Because, you know, I don't care who you are, everybody needs the power word shield.
Yeah, I like having good, decent armor on, and they don't
armor
really...
Armor plus the power wield shield. That's how I'm able to harass a horde, by just going, plopping up my massive shield, and, you know, they can take pot shots at me, but if I'm swimming away, they can't really do anything about it.
Yeah, that's true.
Because you can't be a proper troll, or human troll, if you're Alliance, going into horde territory without having power word shield and just killing their merchants. It was always nice killing merchants.
Supposedly that's supposed to be dishonorable, killing merchants, but...
I don't care.
I know.
I don't do... I don't... No, actually not. No, it's there are a lot of things that are dishonorable, but it will automatically flag you for PvP, of course, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
And then I just float out to sea and let them chase me for a while until my PvP flag resets. Then I can blow raspberries at them. I'm that asshole, yes. DJ, what have you been playing?
I've been fiddling around with the new Astral Chain. It's good. It's very much a game from the people who made Nier Automata and Devil May Cry and Bayonetta. So lots of action, lots of quirky anime-ness. The only thing I absolutely am not a fan of, silent protagonist. It's got a silent protagonist, and there's no discernible reason for it.
Yeah, you know, everybody loved the fact that Gordon Freeman was a silent protagonist. I didn't. And the thing about him, though, he was actually silent within the game world.
Right.
People would comment on it. I mean, stuff like Dragon Age Origins, your character is silent in that you don't hear him speak, but you still get long dialogue options.
Right. And that's what, and Astral Chain is like the former, where like everybody else is talking and your character just like stares blankly and nods his head from time to time, and it's just weird. I don't like it.
You know who handled it the best?
Owlboy.
No.
Owlboy.
No. The Wolf Among Us. Because you could have Bigby just select that ... dialogue option, and he would just cross his arms and stare at them, because the non-answer was just as good as an answer, and he would use that to intimidate people.
I liked, I think they did okay with Breath of the Wild Link. They implied that he actually does talk. You just don't see the scenes where he's talking, giving advice or whatever to the different characters.
You ever watch Deep Space Nine?
Yes, yeah. Oh, Morn, yes.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Everybody talks about Morn like he's a chatterbox.
Right,
You can't get him to shut up.
Right. And the reason I say Owlboy over and over is because, canonically, Otis is a mute. So that's everybody true. Knows that he can't talk, and he's more expressive because of it in other ways.
That's a very good point.
Yeah, I think that's
like,
real.
I prefer Buffy's version of silence. He's just like, I'm not going to talk.
It just really delights me that they took the whole silent protagonist trope, which it is a trope, and it's a boring trope and a bad trope, and they turned it on its head in that game. Whereas in Astral Chain, your character is just standing there, staring blankly off into space, and everybody else is talking, and he's just kind of – it's just kind of awkward.
Feels maybe lazy.
Dragon Quest does the same thing. I love Dragon Quest, but like they have done that in every game they've done.
Yeah. They're just being consistent, but I think the hero has facial reactions. He's not just staring blankly all the time.
Right. To a degree, I just think it's – I don't want to say lazy so much. It's just, there's just no – like there's some traditions that you just kind of need to let die because they're rooted in times where like there was either a very esoteric reason like Zelda where they were trying to make it – give you the feeling that you were that character and it would break the immersion if they had their own personality.
Yeah.
Or like because they didn't want to do the writing or the voice acting for that character, which is like a technical limitation. But either way,
I'd rather the voice character be silent than be obnoxious like they did in the Nintendo version of Simon Belmont. That was not my Simon Belmont. That was nowhere near what I imagined him, and it was so obnoxious.
What are you saying about right. Captain N, the Game Master, when he just became effeminate and haughty?
And yeah, and really? They did the I'm same with Mega Man and Kid Icarus. It was just annoying.
Right,
Yeah.
Yes, you can go the wrong way and just like have some bad voice acting. Like, I agree with that. Although sometimes it ends up legendarily bad, like Symphony of the Night.
Yeah. Figure out what they were doing with Simon, giving him a really effeminate voice and always talking and playing with his whip. I know there was a hidden message there somewhere.
So yeah, Astral Chain, good game, fun, gonna keep playing it. Really, really want people to stop doing silent protagonist where it doesn't have a reason.
If you ever play the Council, you'll wish that the main character was silent. He has the worst voice actor ever. Ever, and I'm talking about, you know, I'm talking about those Typing of the Dead games too.
Those were hilarious.
No, I mean, at least that was just incompetence. This guy just—I don't know where they got him. He's about as French as Louis the Butcher in Brooklyn. Anyways, I was playing Assassin's Creed 3 Remastered. And it's odd because I never got to play it. You know, I knew I had a copy, but I lost the copy and I never looked for it. So this is actually, you know, I knew some of the story beats, and I've come to the conclusion of one thing about it, and that is Monolith showed Ubisoft how you do that kind of game so much better with the Middle Earth games. Assassin's Creed 3 was so slow. The combat was awful. You know, the counters were badly done. And I'm not sure, did Batman Arkham come before or after Assassin's Creed 3? I can't think that it came before it.
That's a good question.
I know that Batman Arkham Asylum came out in 2009. But Assassin's, you know, Playing the Middle-Earth games has spoiled me for that kind of game, you know? It takes Assassin's Creed, and it takes Batman Arkham, and it makes a happy little baby. I know I keep on saying this to you, TJ, but I'm going to tell you something. If you play Middle-Earth, you're going to be ruined for both Batman and Assassin's Creed. Monolith knows its shit.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed 3 was 2012, and Arkham Asylum, like you said, was 2009.
There's no excuse for the shitty combat.
Yeah. I mean...
And I was actually starting to get into the story, but, you know, the gameplay just drove me up the wall. And here's the thing. You know, I don't want to play Banjo-Kazooie, or in this case, Ukulele, chasing down pages. And it makes no sense in the story, too. Why would the fuck would Connor be hunting him down when he never spoke to Benjamin Franklin in the first place?
Right.
Why would he be doing his father's job? Not that it's a job, but it is just so stupid.
Yeah, I never hear really anyone talk about Assassin's Creed 3, like, at all. Like, people like Assassin's Creed 2, and then people like Black Flag.
Yeah.
But I never really hear anything at all about Assassin's Creed 3.
No, I mean, people do talk about it like it's the redheaded stepchild, you know, or at least they talked about it like it was the redheaded stepchild after 4 came out, you know. And then all those other Assassin's Creeds just stunk it up. And, you know, I'm going to say this right now. If you liked Odyssey or Origins, you are wrong. Your opinion is wrong. Those games are awful, too. Here's the thing. I remember when you didn't have to be higher level than someone else just to assassinate them. What, did their neck get hit points? It doesn't make... You know why? Because they want you to buy stuff, you know? When I was playing Assassin's Creed 2, I wanted to get Altair's armor, not because it gave me any bonuses, but because it looked cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know? In Assassin's Creed Origins or Odyssey, you know, it's like, oh, you have to get this number in order to beat this number. Fuck you. I don't want to do that. You know, whenever I got upgrades in Shadow of War, you know, they felt like I was earning something, you know?
Yeah, it's weird when they put in, like, esoteric level mechanics that make things, like, make enemies impossible if you haven't just, like, gotten to that point yet. It makes more sense, like, when there's actually enemies that have certain mechanics to them that make it impossible to assassinate them if you don't have the right tools.
Sounds like rook captains in Shadow of War.
but just randomly saying, oh, they have a higher number value than you, so you can't kill them, is stupid.
You know, at least in Shadow of War, they have a higher number value, but that isn't the main reason why they'll beat you. It's because they're immune to range attacks, or they're immune to finishing attacks, or they're, you know, you have to investigate him. Oh, he's scared of bees? Okay, I'm going to just shoot down this wasp's nest and watch him shit his pants. And watch him run away frightened, so you can run him down and just stab him. Yeah, you got to play the Middle-Earth games. It's like saying, well, you know, I never really watched Star Wars.
Yeah, I was thinking about Dishonored and the fact that, like, there was just parts of the game. You feel like such a badass because you have all these powers. And then you get to certain parts of the game where there are these dudes that carry around these, basically these sound machines that literally their whole point is to dampen your powers. And so suddenly you have to figure out new ways to get around those, and, like, it means investing in some gadgets or figuring out some technical ways to get around things as opposed to confronting them directly.
That reminds me, you know, they really never use the sound people in BioShock Infinite. I mean, I know they existed. I saw them walking around, but they never really did anything. They never really posed a threat.
Hmm.
You know, I'm one of those people who thinks BioShock 2 is the best of this series, and it always makes me laugh. It is the worst. No. The reason that people thought it was the worst is it had multiplayer. Gasp! And was by 2K Marin, not Irrational. But BioShock 1 was okay. BioShock 2 improved everything, and BioShock Infinite was just masturbation.
BioShock 1 had probably the most iconic story. BioShock 2 still had a very good story. And yeah, I would agree with you on Infinite.
Anyway, so the next game I'm getting is Outward. That'll be interesting.
Outward?
Yeah. It's that new role-playing game, first-person role-playing game. Except in this one, you play someone who an entire village hates, and you have to get on their good side, from what I understand. So we'll see.
Oh, it's by Deep Silver. Interesting. Guess they shelved Dead Island for a bit.
Oh, no. Dead Island 2 Remastered is coming out. I think it's already out, actually.
Well, you mean...
That's interesting, at least. I'm not really interested in zombie games, but RPG games, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, the setting of Outward is what really sells it, and there's a lot of stuff, there's a lot of game mechanics in it, I'm not going to get into them right now, which are supposed to really make an interesting experience. I saw something that was on Xbox Game Pass that I'm going to try out, and that's Two Crowns. Or is it Two Crowns Kingdom? What is the name of that game? Is it Two Crowns Kingdom or Kingdom Two Crowns?
Kingdom Two Crowns sounds familiar.
Yeah, it's Kingdom Two Crowns,
yeah,
which is basically a side-scrolling, retro-styled kingdom builder, crafter,
micro-strategy. Oh, yeah. It's sort of tower defense, but sort of not.
Yeah, so I heard a lot of good things about it. There was a sequel that came out on Steam the other, earlier this year, so I want to check out the base game.
It's very good. At least I liked it a lot. It's you basically protect your little village of townsfolk as they build stuff up for you, and you give them gold to do it. And you are a king on your horse, just riding around town protecting people.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for someone to remake D&D Stronghold.
Oh yeah, I love that. That was a good game. I played that back in the day, building up resources and then having characters get more powerful and they can fight the monsters, and that felt like a kingdom builder game to me.
I mean, one of the things though is it was so ahead of its time with its 3D that it, the engine often brought the computer to its knees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they should remake it, you know, just with better with better graphics. Because, like I said, that was it was in 1993 that it was made. So you can, and it was in 3D. And I had the MS-DOS version of it. For some reason, I thought I had the C64 version, but that would have been possible. Trying to get it to work was such a pain and a hassle. MS-DOS sucked. I'm glad Windows came around. And one of the things I liked was you just sent out the characters that you build, you know, the clerics and faders and elves and all that stuff, you know, and you had to level them up by sending them off on little missions.
Yeah, and they would bring back items.
Yeah,
it was really cool. You could, I remember building a lot of inns to get to make money. And
yeah, that was there was a lot of stuff like that that you had to do. Yeah, almost like that D&D Dungeon Master game in which you send your people off and they either came back dead or they came back with items.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the news now. Divinity Original Sin 2 coming to the Switch, and this comes to us from a press release. Originally released to critical acclaim on PC, Divinity Original Sin 2, which Scott has played, received a 93 Metacritic rating, and is currently one of only a few games to receive a 10/10 from GameSpot. It was recently awarded number one on the PC Gamer Top 100, updated for 2019. Wow. Okay. The Top 100 what? All games? That's interesting. Right now, you can start your BAFTA award-winning adventure on the Nintendo Switch and enjoy near limitless RPG freedom wherever you are. You know that this is, you can tell this is all PR speak. This is not an article. Yeah. This is just a press release. But here's the interesting part. For players who wish to continue their stories, Divinity Original Sin 2 Definitive Edition includes cross-saves between Nintendo Switch and Steam on PC, which means players will be able to upload and download their save files and continue on the go. So you could be playing on Steam, then you say, I'm going to go out, then, you know, transfer the save files to your Switch, go out, play some more, then come back and play on your PC.
This does raise an interesting question. What if you modded your Divinity Original Sin 2? Does the file not transfer properly?
No, but I'm wondering if the cheats will... Who cares if you cheat, though? It's a single-player game.
I don't think the mods would. If they're on your PC computer, they would need to be on the Switch as well. Otherwise, the save would load and say things are missing.
On the other hand, you could cheat. You know, you could use cheat files, but who cares? It's a single-player game. You can do whatever you want. You can make your character have 18, 18, 18, 18, and a plus 500 sword. Go crazy, you know? It's a single-player game. You're only cheating yourself.
Right. I just worry because, like, I know that people on PC, like... Yeah, there's a bunch of people that don't play with mods, so they'll probably be fine. I just know that they're... Like, Divinity in particular has a pretty robust mod scene on Steam.
Well, I upload mods to Game Watcher, so a lot of the mods that are for Divinity Original Sin 2 are new classes. You know, like, oh, we make an assassin class, or we make this class or that class.
Right. Occasionally they put stuff together for the Game Master mode, like new toolboxes and new monsters to go in there, but, like, I don't know. Either way, it's really cool. It's nice to see Divinity moving to places, to other places where people can play it, because it does deserve it. There was actually a lot of Nintendo news today. There was a Nintendo Direct, and there was a lot of new things to come out of it. First and foremost, Terry Bogard from Fatal Fury is coming to Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Yeah, and so is that
Sans from Comic Undertale. Sans. Yeah, Sans from Undertale.
Yeah.
Banjo-Kazooie was made playable today. Terry Bogard will be the last of the DLC characters, and then they put stuff like Proto Man and Sans in the game, which I'm getting to the feeling that, like, Smash, they're not even gonna make another Smash Brothers. They're just gonna keep putting things in Smash Ultimate until all of the things are in Smash Ultimate. Everything that you know will eventually be in Smash Ultimate. Master Chief, Smash Ultimate. Marcus Fenix from Gears of War, Smash Ultimate.
You know, we talked about last week that they officially announced Ori and the Blind Forest for the Switch.
Ori's going to be coming to Smash Ultimate.
Yeah. That would be pretty cool.
I would dig it.
I would like to see the opposite way, in which you have some Halo multiplayer maps in which the third enemy are Goombas. And Bowser comes as one of the bosses.
Well, there will be Goombas in Link's Awakening when that arrives.
Yeah.
By the way, I forgot to mention, I was at GameSpot today, and I was looking through the Xbox 360 games, because I was looking for some, you know, either some BC or some other stuff, and I found NCAA Football 14, which was the last game that they released for in that series. Do you know how much it cost as a used game?
How much?
$70.
Why?
Wow.
All of these other games, you know, $9.99, $4.99. NCAA Football, $14, $70. And it's not backwards compatible.
That's ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing. It's also extremely popular. If I had saw it there for even just $20, I would have snapped it up immediately.
Right.
Because it was extremely full-featured and all that stuff, you know. I have a 360, but the power thing is joint, so I have to get a new one. And I am sorely tempted to buy NCAA Football 14 for $70. But here's the thing I posted on Twitter. I posted to EA Sports. Dudes, this is $70 used at GameStop. Isn't that a bit of a hint that maybe somebody might want to pay money for this remastered on current consoles? You can sell it for $60. No one's going to complain.
Yeah.
Because it'll be less than a used copy at GameStop. It's insane. I don't know why. Maybe they don't want to pay the NCAA license, you know, or something like that. But at least make it backwards compatible. No, no, I think you still have to deal with the license. No, no. Just only people who have the disc.
Yeah. I don't know. That's muddy waters. I mean, like, why don't they make Beyond Human backwards compatible?
You mean Too Human?
Too Human. That's the one.
It is backwards compatible. And I got
is it?
Yeah, and they released it for free.
Wow.
They released it on the Xbox 360 store for free. You can get Too Human for free, which is on my hard drive right now.
Interesting.
I'm keeping it there just in case they decide to get funny with it.
Someday they'll put out Too Human 2 finally, at long last.
But it's funny because, you know, Too Human, for those who don't know, there was a dispute between Silicon Knights and Epic, and Silicon Knights completely botched a lawsuit, which ended up with Epic winning and having the judge say you got to destroy all copies on the shelves. This is one way to get around it, I guess. I mean, if you put Too Human on the backwards compatibility store and then just give it away for free, you know, you're not breaking any laws, I guess. So sorry to say, TJ, but your disc of Too Human is no longer that special because anybody can play it now. On the other hand, it is a physical copy that no one else can have. I think I still have a physical copy of Too Human somewhere.
Would they call it Too Human 2, or would they just spell it the number 2 and then human?
Well, they called it Two Worlds 2, no, didn't they?
I guess.
there's a franchise we haven't spoken about in years. Two Worlds. The Elder Scrolls wannabe that, you know, Two Worlds 2 was almost good. But it was very buggy, so. Yeah. That's something that I like, and that is spell combination. You know, take one spell, you take the other spell, you smush them together, and now you have this new spell.
I like that you could interact with the things in the world, because I remember being on my horse and riding along, and then there was this little wooden beam crossing the path, and I figured this was going to be some locked gate that I couldn't go through. And I went up, and no, I knocked the gate down and was able to ride through. And it's like, it was just nice not to have, like, invisible locked doors or whatever that just seemed ridiculous. It was just, you know, it was just this beam thing. You get rid of it and you go on your way. And so it was just a nice interactivity in the world.
You can buy Two Worlds 2 for $20 on Steam. Get the Velvet Edition, which includes the DLC, for $25.
That sounds good.
It still has mixed reviews.
That's fine.
But, you know, this is the HD version, so it looks really, really pretty. I mean, it looks good, but, you know, the main problem with that game was that it was buggy as hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know what game that was buggy as hell when it was released that I still haven't played yet? And that's Arcanum. It was one of the few games that Troika made. Everybody raved about it in its patched version, that it was amazing when patched.
Interesting.
You ever heard of Arcanum? Scott, you must have known about Arcanum.
Yes.
Of Magicka, what is it? Of Magicka and something Obscurum?
Yeah, I think it's on my Steam or on my GOG, one of those two. Let's see, it's probably on GOG.
Of Steamworks and Magic Obscura.
Okay.
And it's on Steam too for $6. Wow. Yeah, I might actually shell out $6 just to play Arcanum, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I have it on GOG. That's where I had it. Yeah,
it's also
I played it.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. It's made by the same guys who did Vampire the Masquerade. So it has all of that, you know, everything you do has an effect way before, you know, Divinity, you know, did it. I mean, everything that you did in Arcanum had an effect on the world. So that was Troika's big thing, because they did the same thing with Vampire the Masquerade. I cannot wait for Masquerade 2 to come out.
It was also a very steampunk plus fantasy type setting. You had giant airships and magic, and it was pretty interesting, pretty different.
There's a lot of games coming out this week. I mean, next week it's starting up, folks. It's going to start the train. You know what I mean? I mean, Borderlands is going to start it off. I would say Control started it off, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Link's Awakening is coming out this month.
Yeah, I mean, everything's coming out. I mean, Shenmue 3 is coming out, although I think they're trying to sneak it out through the front. Don't let anybody see it. Are you going to be getting Luigi's Mansion 3?
Yes.
Okay, just wondering.
Yeah, that looks like a lot of fun. I'll definitely be playing it with my daughter and my wife, and we'll have fun hunting down ghosts.
I still want to play Man of Medan. It came out, and it's getting really good reviews. You know what's really getting amazing reviews? Which sort of surprised me. Gears 5.
Really?
Yeah, it's getting rave reviews. Because, the multiplayer is really good. The single-player campaign no longer has that prick, Marcus's son, as the protagonist. What's-her-face is a lot more interesting. You know, but basically, they just ramped up all the multiplayer to a fine sheen. The other thing that they're saying about Gears 5 is it has a crap ton of stuff to do. And there's a level editor for the escape mode.
Oh, that's neat.
Yep. And the way it does it is really interesting. Instead of, you know, doing something like the Far Cry editor, say, basically what you do is you just put down tiles. So you know, you get all these tiles and you just plunk down. Sort of like how Hellgate was randomized. They didn't really randomize it. They just placed chunks, you know, in random order. So what happens is when you're making your escape map, you just take these blocks of rooms and just put them in a huge square or rectangle or whatever. So, I mean, Borderlands 3 is coming out in 2 weeks, or actually less than 2 weeks.
Yes.
All these games are coming out that, you know. Now I know the game that's coming out soon that TJ's salivating over. Well, the first one, because we all know as soon as it comes out, he's going to be on it like a sumo wrestler. And that's Doom Eternal.
Doom Eternal is going to be so fun. I'm ready for a new sound. I need that soundtrack. I want it on a separate disc that I can load into my computer and just listen to all the time. There is also Contra Rogue Corps, which is going to be really fun. I played that at Gamescom, and it was a blast.
And here's the thing. Halo Master Chief's Collection is supposed to be coming out at the end of this year. I think it's coming out at the end of this year. I mean, they have all this stuff, you know, because they were dealing with Halo 5 and the multiplayer and all that stuff. I think they've had that sorted out by now. When was the last time you played Halo?
I would say I played a little bit of Halo 3. Actually, you know what? No, I played Halo Reach. That was the last one I played.
Just a little bit of Halo 3?
Just a little bit of Halo 3. And I played a little bit of ODST. Hated ODST.
I love ODST.
I couldn't appreciate it at the time. It was a little too different for me.
Now having a hub world that you run around and get into missions through various entrances. Yeah, everybody does that now.
I'm sure if I went back to it, I could probably appreciate it more. But at the time, I was like, no shields, fuck this.
You're not a Spartan.
I know. And that's the thing, is that at the time I want...
But unlike Master Chief, you have now regenerating health.
Right. I at the time, I wanted to be a Spartan, and that's that. Halo Reach was good.
Trooper, who cares about that? I want to be a fucking badass.
Halo Reach was really good.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Firefight is my addiction. And I never played Horde, which is supposed to be the best type of that game, of, you know, which invented basically more or less invented the genre for shooters, you know, the Horde mode. As a matter of fact, when they call Firefight a Horde mode, you know, and they say the Horde mode in Gears 5 is supposed to be really, really good.
Untitled Goose Game comes out this month.
Okay. So,
you guys,
let's move on to the next item, TJ. Go ahead. This is actually sort of important.
The new Steam library is coming September 17th from PC Gamer. Steam has never been a pretty computer program, but a long-awaited overhaul coming September 17 brings a more modern look to the Steam library, reorganizing game pages with larger artwork, a prominent space for updates, and a new homepage that highlights what your friends are playing and games you may not even remember you own.
Yeah, I look at my library and say, oh, right, I haven't played that yet. Mm-hmm. I own it and it's just sitting there. It says, oh, you bought it in 2013, but never played it. And I always feel like the Steam is going, shame, shame. You bought this and you never... Oh, there's a Humble Bundle, what can I say? I intend to play it someday.
Yeah. Steam's best new library feature is a smarter organizing tool called Collections, which replaces the old categories system. Collections are essentially Steam's version of a Gmail filter. The buzzword for collections is dynamic. You can create a collection by simply choosing a variety of tags, say RPG or multiplayer or controller support, and Steam will automatically put all the games with those tags in your library. The dynamic bit is that Steam will add any future games you buy with those tags to the collection too. The new home screen is mainly organized to show you what your friends are doing and what new things are happening in games you play often. Game pages will now offer a nice new post summary section that shows what achievements you unlocked in the last session and your last session and include your recent screenshots. Aside from the new look for the library, Valve is also doing more with its Steam Labs experiment, adding a new search page with more filtering options, including only showing games on sale or below a certain price. It'll also scroll infinitely instead of showing your results spread across across dozens of pages.
Yeah, the only thing is, you know, it's sort of like the iOS store. You know, just trying to find stuff. Hopefully any developers will be able to, you know, get their stuff shown off a lot better.
Yeah, I wonder if this is going to have, like, a beta where they're going to test it out for a while before moving everything over.
Nope, they're just shoving it out there on the 17th.
Oh, that'll probably go well. I'm sure everybody will love it.
Yeah. I didn't mind the aesthetic look, but reorganizing it sounds like a good idea. I do like the automatic filtering of the game. So if you feel like playing a shooter or adventure or whatever, you'll have your little collection there and you can better look through what you want. So that might help people get to those games that they haven't played in a while.
It sort of looks like Steam had sex with the Microsoft Windows Store.
It doesn't sound like a bad thing.
I just hope that one thing that they're not telling us is that all those stupid asset flip games are going to be gone. Or at least shoved out of the way so you don't have to deal with them. Because, like I said, one of the hardest parts about the Steam store is, you know, you have all this crap games that are just asset flips and you have to really search to find a good indie game. A legit indie game. And I'm not talking about, you know, a major indie game like Fez or Hollow Knight or something like that. No, I mean a legitimate indie game that, you know, that isn't an asset flip. You know, I mean, there were two games which I bought which were for $2, which were basically text adventures, but the theme of them was that you made choices and all the choices that you made changed the story. So it was sort of like an interactive novel, you know.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of changes, so it's like there was so many ways you can go into. Which meant a lot of writing by this person. It was definitely a labor of love.
Mm-hmm. Well, I find it very curious that they're not like normally people when they are normally groups when they do like a new UI like this, they like beta it out for a little while.
I'm sure they've been beta testing it for a while now.
Maybe, but it almost sounded like you said they were just going to push it out there.
Well, they're going to push it out now. I mean, they've done all the work. It's just going to be pushed out on the 17th.
Huh.
You know, Slay the Spire, that's gay. By the way, one thing I forgot to mention on what games have you been playing. I've been playing Slay the Spire for the past 8 weeks, almost nonstop. Every time I get a free moment and I have some time to kill, that's my go-to game, Slay the Spire. And I know it's been out for 2 years, but, you know.
Well, you can play a game anytime. I mean, it doesn't matter if it was 2 years or 10 years released.
No, but do you know Slay the Spire?
Yes, I have played it.
Oh, okay. I've just been finding all these combos.
Yeah, and there's different paths you can take, and I think there's some randomness to it as well.
There's a lot of randomness to it.
Yeah.
Like if I'm with a character, there's very little chance I'm going to be able to use the same combos that I did the previous game.
You know, right.
Because the cards just simply don't come up. I still haven't beaten the third boss, whatever the boss is. Come close, but haven't quite done it yet.
So that certainly makes it a very replayable game.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Akumi Nakamura leaves Ghostwire Tokyo Development. This is from PC Gamer. Ghostwire Tokyo Creative Director Akumi Nakamura made a big and very positive splash when she presented the announcement trailer during Bethesda's press conference at E3 2019. The game itself is an action-adventure game in which you'll fight paranormal enemies and rid the city of supernatural evil. Nakamura said that the gameplay will be different from the survival horror style that the developer Tango Gameworks is known for. Oddly, it seems Nakamura has left the project, leaving a tweet stating, "After 9 years as a creative director and art director at Tango and ZeniMax, I felt here is one of the ends of the journeys. I learned from the talented people I've worked with and I respect. Contact me if anybody wants to work with me." Bethesda confirmed that Nakamura has left the studio and is no longer working on Ghostwire Tokyo. "We can confirm that Nakamura-san has decided to leave Tango, and we wish her the best of luck in whatever is next for her," a rep said. Tango continues to be led by a legendary Shinjin Mikami and his talented team in the development of Ghostwire Tokyo. "We look forward to sharing more on what they are creating in the coming months." And then it says, "I do not want to forget to appreciate and respect to everything," Nakamura wrote in follow-up tweet. "I also decided to proceed to the new world. I can keep myself happy and somebody require me. Now the huge world is showing me infinite possibilities, like an open world video game. Life is not linear." So I guess she wants to move on to other projects.
Well, here's the thing. For those of you who don't know, Tango Gameworks is Shinji Mikami's company. And if you don't know who that is, I'll just say Resident Evil, God Hand, Vanquish, Shadows of the Damned, and also recent for Bethesda, the Evil Within games. And if you know that, then you know he's batshit crazy. At least the games he makes are. So, yeah. I don't care what her reasoning is. It's kind of odd when a creative director leaves a major game development in the middle of its development. I mean, I wouldn't have blinked twice if she had done it after the game was finished. But to do it mid-development, that sort of raises some eyebrows.
Yeah. I don't know, like, maybe, that sounds like an HR issue.
Like she wanted to be, but she did it, like, gracefully without...
She did, but, you know, you don't want to be, you know, viewed as a negative person. You know, it's like, yeah, they were all assholes. You know, look how that did for other people who did that. I'm not going to name any names, but, you know, I'm just going to say Rez.
I think if I remember the right person, she was very cheerful when she was introducing the game, I think.
Oh, yeah, and... She everybody was drab and boring, and she was there, like, you know, just waving her arms, hey, you know. Some people thought it was cringy. I didn't. But
I didn't think it was cringy. Awesome. I thought it was cute. I liked it, and it maybe engaged me into what she was trying to show, you know, because if a person's being boring and unenthused, then you're not really engaged in the game that they're presenting.
So Ghostwire Tokyo, it's supposed to be a horror game, but from what I understand, it's going to be a fun horror game. Kind of kooky, which is basically what Resident Evil 4 was. A kooky horror game. So that's what I'm thinking. Although it takes place in modern-day Tokyo, so...
Yeah.
Besides the show, what did you think of it?
There was no video. There wasn't much video of it, so it was kind of hard to put a finger on exactly what it was going to be like. But I figured it was going to be like sort of an investigative type thing, just like with some paranormal activity. I don't know.
Like Paranormal Activity. That was such a boring movie.
Not like Paranormal Activity, but like doing investigations, and then a ghost shows up, and maybe it's friendly ghost, or maybe it wants to punch you in the face.
Wasn't that Murdered Soul Suspect?
Weren't all the ghosts mean and Murdered Soul Suspect, though?
Yeah, I mean, that game was basically L.A. Noire with ghosts.
Hmm. Well, either way, like, I know that Ghostwire, like, this isn't the first game in the Ghostwire series, it's just the first game that, Tango has been working on. I don't know, I've never seen what the other Ghostwire games looked like, so I have no idea what to expect from it. But, it is weird. She was so, she got super popular after that presentation. Maybe it just got on her nerves, like people constantly following her and like checking, especially on social media.
That could be possible. I mean, just look at Cammy Dunaway. Oh, but she frightened me, actually, Cammy Dunaway. She just frightened the hell out of me. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Not quite.
You remember Nintendo when they were doing back with the Wii and they were doing you know, Wii Music and all that stuff. So you had Reggie Fils-Aimé, and then you had Cammy Dunaway, this woman who's just wide-eyed and like someone's demented mother that just made you want to run away. She was like creepy in a very mom condescending way. Just look her up. You'll remember her. She's hard to forget.
Like, I'm not saying that is why Ikumi left the project, but like some people don't like it very much. Like when suddenly everybody is paying attention to them all the time.
But she was on the friggin' stage, so she must have liked it a bit.
Some people put on a real good face.
Right.
Yeah, but here's the thing: she didn't have to.
Sure.
She's the creative director. She doesn't have to go on stage.
I know, but like I doubt she was expecting to be one of the all-time highlights of Evo 2019, which is kind of what ended up happening. People remember, of all the things, people remember Keanu Reeves.
But she was a long-time industry veteran. I mean, she was the creative director for Okami, Bayonetta, Resident Evil 2. I mean, sure, this isn't new for her.
Sure, but she was behind the scenes. This was like the first time
Of the scenes for those games. What are you talking about?
No, I'm talking about like when has she ever been on stage making super huge appearances like that before E3 2019?
Tokyo Game Show, I'm pretty sure.
I don't know. Huh.
I don't know. Either way, maybe she just got bored.
I mean, when I wrote my article about the highlights of E3 2019, the big three were the guy from Keanu Reeves. That cool ass dog for the guy for Ghost Recon and Ikumi. She was delightful.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there was no Terry Crews, so you had to look to somebody.
Right? But she did a pretty good job. It's sad to see her go. I hope she finds good work somewhere because she clearly had, like, with games like Ikami and The Evil Within Us 2 under her belt. I'm certain that we'll see her back in some good projects soon.
Definitely agree there.
She was working for 9 years with ZeniMax. I mean, here's the thing about ZeniMax. They can break the most sturdy person.
Right. You gotta... I mean... What's his name? The guy who made Skyrim. He kind of looks dead inside sometimes. Todd Howard. That's the guy.
I'm actually friends with him. Well, not acquaintances with him.
Todd Howard is a great guy, I'm sure, but he also kind of looks a little, like, just tired when he's on stage. Like, I'm doing my best.
I first started chatting with him because I was doing a review of Morrowind.
Huh.
Way back when. Him and the other guy.
Pete Hines?
Yeah, Pete Hines. Actually, it was Pete Hines I chatted with to get a Bethesda invite, but I couldn't make it to E3, so it wasn't going to happen. So yeah.
I've talked to Pete Hines. He's a wonderful guy.
Yeah, a little bit testy sometimes, but yeah.
A little bit testy, yeah.
So what were we talking about? Ghostwire Tokyo.
Yeah, I have no doubt that she'll be back in work in no time. Like, those are some good games that she's got under her belt. Anyone who recognizes, like, her work for, like, as a creative director, as a designer. I mean, sometimes you just need a change of scenery. And maybe it was just, like, maybe it's a combination of things where she just didn't feel like working with ZeniMax anymore. And also, like, the whole thing with E3 blowing up and her being suddenly a public face.
I don't think that was anything. I really don't. Because it's going to follow her around wherever she goes. So I think it was something else.
Maybe so.
She was quick to note that she did not... She cared about the people she worked with. But, you know, you don't work with ZeniMax. That's a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. It'll be interesting to see what she's... Maybe she doesn't want to be in video games anymore, period.
Maybe. Maybe she wants to write books. Spooky books.
Well, maybe she just wants to do a different product, you know?
Maybe.
Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And we're going to have a bunch of games in 2 weeks to talk about. I just can't wait to see what people are going to be talking about in 2 weeks. I am on the fence about NBA 2K20 because I'm just hoping it's not one big virtual currency mess again. The demo pissed me off. You create a character, you can create 5 characters, here's the thing, you play one by one and then you can't play them anymore, they're locked out, and you can only use them again when the main game comes out. That's not a demo. You know, I want to be able to make one character and just play with him for a while, get used to shooting, and then, you know, but this is just hostile. It's like slapping my hands away from the demo, saying, no, you can't have that. Not until you get the main game.
I need September to fly by, because in October, The Outer Worlds comes out, and I'm really, really excited to play that.
I thought that was coming out this month, too.
That's October 25th, The Outer Worlds.
Borderlands maybe done right.
Maybe. Seeming pretty good so far.
I don't like Borderlands. I want someone else to do it right.
For what I've played, then you'll probably not like Borderlands 3 because it's still Borderlands.
I know, it's Gearbox. Fuck Gearbox. Fuck everything they do. Randy Pitchford can go sit on it. I've really started to despise Randy Pitchford. He was a shit during the entire Duke Nukem thing, and then he became even more of a shit during Aliens Colonial Marines, claiming, no, it was all their fault. Yeah, they had evidence that you know it was your fault, asshole.
I can count on
stuff with Claptrap's actor, and...
I can count on more than 2 hands how many people will never forgive Gearbox for Alien Colonial Marine.
Yeah, I still have 2 copies that were sent to me to review that are still shrink-wrapped. And they're backwards compatible if I wanted to play them. By the way, that game is broken, but it was broken because someone misspelled something in the coding for the AI for the aliens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so strange, you know? The game is at least boring but average when that line of coding is until then, you know, the aliens just act weird without having it fixed. Anyway, we were talking enough about Alien Colonial Marines. When did that come out anyway?
I don't remember.
I remember doing the Wikipedia page for that game, so it had to been a while ago. It was in 2013, so no, we can't do a gaming flashback on it, but we can do a gaming history on it. Not on the game, but on the entire controversy surrounding it. And why now, if you notice on trailers, they will let you fucking know this does not represent final game footage. That's because of Aliens Colonial Marines, folks. And also maybe because of Killzone. the Killzone trailer. Remember the Killzone trailer?
Yes.
When it was photorealistic. And I remember reading the developers were in the seats and they were mortified.
Sweating.
There was no way they were ever going to be able to do that, especially on the PlayStation 3. It was not that powerful. Or was it the PlayStation 2? No, it was the PlayStation 3. They were mortified. They were just like, why are you doing this to us, Sony? You know? And it could have been with Hello Games and No Man's Sky, but then again, you know, he just buried himself further. He had no reason to lie or misrepresent, whatever word you want to use, but he did it anyway, Sean Murray.
Mm-hmm.
But give him credit, you know, No Man's Sky Beyond, everybody's raving about it. It's sort of like, you know, you keep pressing on it, you're going to release a good game at some point. Just should have waited a couple of years for it. And, you know, there's a lot of happy Xbox One users because guess what? They didn't have to play the play the crappy version of No Man's Sky. They got the fixed version of No Man's Sky. And, oh, by the way, that's happening also with Fallout 76. I don't know if you've noticed this, but very, 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 very quietly, Bethesda's gotten Fallout 76 up to snuff, and people are really starting to enjoy it now.
That's good, at least.
Anthem just got the 1.4 update, so that's being worked on. But the difference is, I don't know if EA is really working that hard on it, you know. I mean, Hello Games is working really hard on No Man's Sky because, you know, it's either that or Oblivion, you know. Bethesda has to work on Fallout 76 because they sunk everything into that game. EA sunk everything into Anthem 2, but they just thought, you know, we're just going to do Dragon's Age 4.
I know I am looking forward to the new Star Wars game coming out.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah, it looks good. It's, it's sort of like an open world game in the same. You know, I heard that they actually said it was Zelda mixed with Dark Souls.
That is an interesting.
The combat is Dark Souls, according to them. Which is good, because, you know, I don't like all-powerful Jedis, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That one guy who's a Jedi killer, just, you know. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that was obnoxious, too. He was a clone, and it was just, I don't know.
It looks good, and, you know. Oh, you know what game just came out, which I'm interested in? Sorry, we're reverse-ending this podcast. This is going to be the post-credits stuff. The new Ancestors game, which you play a monkey, and you have to evolve.
Oh, yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Here's the thing. From what I understand, and even the game will tell you this, it ain't gonna tell you shit. You have to figure out everything yourself.
That's good.
I mean, they just want you to get into the mindset of evolving, you know. I mean, there are wikis now so that you can just look at them. But if I play it, you know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna stay far away from the wikis. Damn it. If they don't want me to learn, if they don't want me to, they want me to have instructions, then fine. No instructions. I'm going to evolve by myself. I'm going to figure it out myself.
That's always fun. Very satisfying to figure out things on your own. Then you know you've accomplished something.
Speaking of Mankind, have you seen Mankind? Scott? The new 4X civilization game.
Yeah, by Sega, yes. I saw that. That looks interesting. I like the idea of what they're talking about.
The developers said that Civilization has affected way too many 4X games, and they want to do it. They want to deliberately do it much differently than Civilization. They're trying to do the 4X game in a different way.
Yeah, it sounds very different, where you can, like, pick the Egyptians to start with, and then you can pick, like, I don't know, England next or something, and you just keep picking different civilizations that your civilization evolves into, and you customize it. That way you can make your own civilization, so to speak, your own culture, I guess. And it does have that familiarity of Civilization, but I think they're also going their own route too, so it'll be very interesting. I'm curious to see it come out, and I'll probably try it out. And
oh, by the way, speaking of 4X, TJ, I started playing Stellaris on the Xbox.
What do you think of it so far?
I was surprised by the fact that the game is sort of like Alpha Centauri in that there's a running narrative going on in the game. You know, when things happen, you know, it's sort of like an adventure game in that respect. And also, I like the fact that the world is constantly evolving around you. Like, there's a president of Earth being elected, you know, that you have no deal with. And everybody has their own factions and what they want, you know, and all that stuff. The only problem I have is on the Xbox One is that I'm fighting the interface, and the interface is winning. I mean, I get the interface, right, and I get, you know, what they're doing with it. But I have a feeling if I was playing it on PC, I would have a much better time.
There is a lot to that interface. Like, I wondered how well that would translate to console.
Well, I mean, you just have... They have it in the top, bottom, left, and you just move the D-pad down to do these stuff and all that. But, and, you know, and you can pause and stuff like that. But, you know, when playing this kind of game, I think I want a mouse and keyboard.
Yeah.
They managed to do it with a gamepad, but I want a mouse and keyboard for that kind of game. So yeah, I'm intrigued by Stellaris. I'm probably going to contact the developer and say, hey, can you send me, and also the other expansions too.
the Behemoths one is really, really good.
And like I said, playing it, it's sort of like I felt a disconnect, but a good sort of disconnect, in which I'm doing the usual, okay, do this research, have the science ship go investigate this system and all that stuff. But it feels like there's a lot of stuff that's going on that's beyond my control and that I can't control. And, you know, like, civilization is going on without you. You know, no matter what you do, it's going to move on. You know, there's going to be elections. There's going to be people who want to do their own factions, you know, and you're going to have to wait for the aliens to learn how to speak English before you can deal with them. I've gotten to the point of having had the aliens learn my language. And, you know, like I said, I feel like I should be playing this on PC.
What nature of race did you pick?
I just picked the straight up humans.
Okay. I was going to say, because, like, there's warlike, there's pacifist, there's economical.
Yeah, I know. The factions that have popped up, and I think it's because of my own actions on what I was... The first thing I went with was exploration, and then the next policy I went with was diplomacy. So I have two factions pop up. One that was interested in infrastructure, which I was already doing, and the other faction was into... you know, diplomacy and harmony and what's called contacting aliens, which was something else I was doing. I haven't had any yet. I mean, I had the pirates start to pop up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's about as far as I've gotten. I don't want to get any further because I just want to start over with a PC version and go the story fresh now, knowing what I'm really supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's you know, it's like what Mass of Orion was supposed to be.
I really enjoy it. Like, the combat is good, the strategy is good. I really enjoy the interactions between, like, various philosophies.
Yeah. I mean, I also have Galactic Civilizations 3, which I haven't played with much. And it's a little too RPG, you know, too much of an RPG, Galactic Civilizations. Solaris still feels like a 4X game, even though there's a lot of role-playing elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, we will see you next week. Or maybe we'll talk more about Stellaris next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.